had pointed out in a note, we have a lot to cover in our scheduled time of an hour, so we'll move quickly where we can. This meeting will take place via teleconference pursuant to Executive Orders N25-20 and N-29-20. The Board of Directors and employees of Navigator School shall meet via Zoom. Members of the public who wish to access the board meeting are provided the information ahead of time in a published agenda. Members of the public attending online who wish to comment during the board meeting will use the online raise hand tool in Zoom when the chairperson elicits public comments. Sean, would you look for those raised hands if necessary? Members of the public planning to attend by phone are requested to confirm their intent to comment up to prior to the meeting. Individual comments will be limited to 3 minutes. If an interpreter is needed, comments will be translated into English and the time limit shall be 6 minutes. It occurred to me as I was reading this, Sean, in the future, that that part or at least the introduction of this in published agenda should be made available in Spanish going forward. So if you could see that that happens, doesn't much help to talk about interpreters and the need for interpreters. Thank you. Board reserves the right to mute and remove a participant from the meeting if the participant unreasonably disrupts the meeting. Requests for disability-related modifications or accommodations have been presented and made available via the published agenda. With that, I'll call the meeting to order. And Sean, would you record attendance and announce guests, please?
Chuck Daggs.
Here.
Ian Connell. JP Henderson.
Present.
John Flaherty.
Present.
Nora Crivello.
Present.
Shara Hegde.
Present.
Victor Paredes Colonia.
Present.
Okay, we do have a quorum, and I marked Ian absent.
I'm here, Ian is here. If you could amend that.
Sorry. We're all here.
Moving, are there any public members that wish to comment on non-agenda items, Sean?
There are no requests for public comments.
Moving on to D, board chair's opening remarks, I would a couple of items. One, I've received a letter from Pia Ullman asking that her resignation be regarded as effective immediately, and they have accepted that, thanked her for her her work and her effort. She promised to help us recruit someone from the Watsonville area. We're all grateful for her contribution over the past several months. Second, the CEO has informed me that the announcement came that effective March 12th, or actually when schools, this upcoming Monday is the 7th, the following Monday is the 14th. So when schools return on Monday the 14th, masks will no longer be required by the state in schools, though importantly, local counties may, or districts, charters may continue the mandates. Kevin informs me that we are conducting a staff survey to get feedback, and it is important to note that school districts and counties themselves may have specific guidances regarding schools over and above the state. Shara, I'm sure you are familiar with this process and what's going on. I know my wife, who's the city manager up in San Mateo County, is going through this process too. So all that is a preface to say that we could require a SNAP special meeting sometime next week to make a determination as to do we do one broad organization-wide policy? Do we do it by counties? How do our staff feel and in terms of their own safety, the kids' safety, student safety, and generally sort of where are the parents with respect to our schools. Kevin will keep us posted. Tom will keep us on the straight and narrow, and we just have to be available for a potential meeting next week to determine a policy. Any questions regarding that or any of the other items?
Yeah, I have a question. Are you going to survey the parents for their opinions?
What's the board's view on that?
Yeah, let's hear from the board first.
Well, as a board representative, as a parent, I would say that we've been pretty lucky based on some of the other communities that I'm associated with, that we haven't been picketed by the parents out front. But I wouldn't chance that too much longer. And so I would say that the parents' perspective would be one that should be taken into account.
Any other board members? Hearing none, Kevin, you got something to say?
You know, I was gonna ask Kirsten's opinion on whether we should survey parents and, you know, the feasibility of doing that in the next couple days.
Feasibility, I can get a very similar survey out to parents as I shared with staff, so we could get that out right away. I agree with Nora. While we have not been picketed, I definitely have had numerous conversations with many parents and grandparents sharing their thoughts and concerns about the mask mandate, and have not had too many wondering if we were gonna, like, encouraging us too. So I think we probably should get their viewpoint and be able to share that with the board.
And Kirsten, what's the nature of the comments and observations?
That we are not allowing children to be children by making them wear masks.
Okay. So the flip side of that, I appreciate that we took into account multi-generational families throughout the last 2 years and protecting the older community that is in our households. I always thought that was a star for Navigator.
Okay, did I hear conflicting information there then, that some parents want kids to wear masks to protect multi-generational families, and Kirsten, you're saying that they don't?
Conflicting information we is did, what COVID's like, all about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Things have changed. When we first started, absolutely. Things are changing.
Okay. Shara, do you have any insights from your experience up north?
Yeah, I think, caveat, we're in a very different community where we've had absolutely no protests and parents have been 100% supportive. So, and that is largely because many of our families have many household members, right? And so there is a need to protect many people, and there's a need to make sure people can get to work and to school. So there hasn't been a lot of pushback. The one thing I would say is, when you survey parents, I think it's important to know, like, with what intent are we surveying parents? Are we going to share the survey data back with parents? How does their voice factor into the decision, and being clear with parents about that? Because this is a topic that you can, like, literally go like 45, 55 on, and then you have almost half your community telling you, you're not hearing my voice. And so there's a little bit of risk when it comes to that. Often I think the safer approach is just aligning with the state guidelines. One other thing I've heard is mask optional policies that tend to make everyone happy. Like, people who want to wear a mask can put on their N95, KN95s and feel secure, whereas others who feel that they're okay without a mask are also able to do that. So that's another, I think, way to think about that. You do have to set culture around that type of decision, making sure that no one is, you know, being bullied for making a choice one way or the other, or being, you know, pressured to make a choice one way or the other. But those are my thoughts.
That's a very interesting approach. Why wouldn't we take that approach? In terms of
the optional approach?
Yeah, the optional approach.
Well, I'd say that the reason not to take that approach, and I'm not saying that I have a firm view right now on it, but would be that would increase the risk for teachers who have students who choose not to wear a mask. So it just elevates the risk factor. And so if we wanted to have like the maximum level of prevention of viral spread in our classrooms, then we would mandate masks. That's going to be the view of a number of our stakeholders. I don't know if that's going to be the most, but that will be a common view held by many.
Yeah.
Good to know. And something that we'll all need to talk about possibly next week. I will say this. I'm sure with Kevin and not feeling firm about one thing or another, except one thing. I think we have to allow that there are differing points of view, often passionately held on this. I think also that people have a right to protest in one form or another in a particular forum. They do not have the right, and I would not accommodate interfering with the operation of the school or intimidating or creating anxiety for other parents and students, which sort of fall under the bullying line. So the one thing I would suggest that we be prepared to talk about next week is the sort of our emphatic statement from the beginning that while we respect the right to protest, we do not and will not tolerate intimidation or interference in whatever forms or with our and against our staff. So that's just an item that I've run into before, and we just have to be intolerant of intolerance is the way I would say it.
I think Shar brought up a great point. If you survey the parents and a majority says this, but you go a different way, that's a difficult PR thing to manage. So just know that before you do or don't do it.
Yeah, I think it's really important how the survey is positioned, how the questions are asked in terms of what kind of expectations they set for parents.
Kevin, do you know when the counties or the districts will be issuing their views on this?
I do not have a clear understanding of dates or deadlines. I mean, I think everybody's operating on the same one that we are in that, you know, by March 14th, if there's not a district or a charter required mandate, that masks will be optional effective March 14th. So that's the default if we don't do anything. We may hear something different from our counties. I would say based on what was put forth by the state public health, I would find it unlikely that any of our three counties mandate masks unless something changes on the case rates or hospitalizations.
Okay, Kirsten, will you monitor the counties? Thank you. If we're already behind, given this late development, if I could move us to section two, the topical items and the renewal of authorization to continue virtual meetings pursuant to AB 361. We need to pass a resolution. Do I hear a motion?
I'll move to approve.
A second.
Second.
Seconds.
Thank you, Chuck. Sean, any discussion? Hearing none. Sean, will you call the roll, please, to renew the authorization for continuing virtual meetings?
Chuck Daggs?
Aye.
Ian Connell?
Aye.
JP Anderson?
Aye.
John Flaherty?
Aye.
Nora Crivello?
Aye.
Shar Hegde?
Aye.
Victor Paredes Colonia?
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. Just a note to the board that if we talk about removing masks and that sort of thing, hopefully we'll get to a point where we'll be able to meet in person soon. So stay tuned for that. Looking forward to that. Moving to B, the audited financial statements that were made available in our packet. Victor, do you want to talk about these?
Yes, happy to.
All right. So everybody knows that our auditor is Clifton Larson Allen. They audited our consolidated financial statements for Navigator Schools for the year ending June 30th, 2021. And we received their final reports on February 18th. So in the audit package, if you had a chance to read, you'll see the overall opinion of the financial statements. And then you'll see two supplementary performed audits. So with respect to the first main audit, which is of the financial statements, the auditor's opinion was that all information was presented fairly and in accordance with accounting principles that are generally accounting principles of the United States. So in other words, there was no irregularities or material findings with the audit statement. So the audit passed and there were no issues. With respect to the other two supplementary audits, the first of which was a report on compliance for the major federal programs by which Navigator School receives money for. And those are audited against the Office of Management and Budget compliance requirements. Again, we passed, or Navigator passed, and there were no material findings or irregularities related to the major federal program audit. And the third one was with respect to state compliance. So this was in accordance with the 2020-2021 guide for annual audits of K through 12 local education agencies, which is a state compliance reporting. And again, Navigator complied with those laws and regulations of the state programs. And we passed with no irregularities or material findings. So all in all, it was a successful audit, and there was no other issues reported in the audit report. I'll pause there, see if there's any questions.
Thanks, Victor, and congratulations to the staff, particularly Amy.
Exactly.
For a set of unmodified audits. Thank you.
Yes, that's how I'll end that as well. Congratulations, Amy, and to the team. Great job.
Okay, thank you, Victor.
Yep.
Any questions for Victor? Hearing none, we will move to mid-year LCAP update and our recently unmodified audited Amy will provide this information.
Do we need a vote to approve the audit?
Need to approve the audit?
I believe. If so, actually, I did see there was a vote. I believe so. Did you? Is that true, John?
I think it's to accept the audit.
Right. Thank you, Amy. Do I hear a motion to accept all of the audit documents?
It's JP, a motion.
Thank you, JP. Do I hear a second?
Ian, will second.
Thanks, Ian. Discussion? Hearing none. Sean, would you call the vote to accept the audits?
Chuck Daggs?
Aye.
Ian Connell?
Aye.
JP Anderson?
Aye.
John Flaherty?
Aye.
Nora Crivello?
Aye.
Shara Egde?
Aye.
Victor Paredes Colonia?
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
Thank you, Sean. Amy, could you talk to us about the mid-year local control?
Sure. This is something that is new this year with all of the federal funding and everything that was coming out. This year they're asking us to do a mid-year, just an update to the board. They told us we could do it in the presentation instead of the actual template, which we do have the actual templates, but this will work. And it's not for the board's approval like the yearly LCAP. It's just for the board's review and just to see where we're at this point in the year with our goals in our LCAP. And so I'm not sure, because we're a little bit behind on time, if everyone had a chance to just look at the presentation and if anyone had any questions for either myself or the academic team who helped to do those.
I have one question, Amy. It says budget on June XX 2021 on the impact of the budget overview. What day was that? Do you know?
For the board meeting. Sorry about that. I meant to look that up and then I got sidetracked. I'll add that to the presentation.
If you could talk about the date, and this report is essentially why we're meeting today, correct?
Yes, correct. It was on or before. Yes, it was had to be shown to the board on or before the 28th of February. And so that is why we are here today, and the audit.
Are there any large discrepancies you wish to point out to the board, or surprises that you saw with respect to the amounts that were expected and then the amounts that came in?
No, they were pretty close. We right before we submitted our budget overview for parents, we ran the FICMAC that time. And so when I ran it again now, it's about, the numbers are really close. So there's not anything major to point out.
And I know we have a good reason as to why we're talking about this on the day it's due. I think it was because of the state and the monies that were coming in and not coming in. Is that correct?
I don't understand the question. I'm sorry.
Well, we're talking about it on the final day that we have to make it public. Go ahead.
I think that was just because that's the day the board chose to have this meeting. It wasn't purposefully because it was the last day.
Right.
I'll add, John, we also wanted to make sure that when the board met, we were ready with the audit. And so at the time, we didn't have the final audit yet. So we pushed it to the last possible day because the audit also needs to be approved by today.
And one of the questions I had was on prompt three, the educational partner engagement for one-time federal funds. We mentioned that we engaged all educational partners throughout the continuing COVID recovery efforts through all staff meetings, town halls, parent coffees, to name a few. Are we doing town halls and parent coffees?
We are. We have held, the individual sites have continued to hold virtual town halls. Some of them do them during the day. Some of them doing in the evening, or the individual site coffees. And then during the last couple of years, we've held several town halls talking about the various COVID updates and protocols and when we were returning to on you know, from distance learning, what that would look like, what our school day would look like, what the new protocols would look like. So we have held Navigator-wide town halls, and the sites have continued to do site-specific parent coffees just virtually.
Terrific. Thank you, Kirsten. And I'd ask the board if we could just put a pin in Kirsten's answer. We'll come back to that in a matter in a later item, just a referral back to that. Does anyone have any other questions or comments for Amy or the staff with respect to the mid-year report? Hearing none, I would go back to one other question I had on goal one in the metrics. How do we compare when we say suspension rates are less than 2% at each site? And the attendance, which I recall we had a discussion about last time, are we better than other schools in our districts? Are we higher than other charters? How do those numbers operate out in non-isolation, I guess I would say?
Well, John, as it relates to the suspension data, we won't be able to look at other schools' data until the state dashboard is updated. Otherwise, it would be kind of informal by, you know, outreach. So I don't have a percentage of other charters at this time.
For you, Kevin, and for Sharon and James, for that matter, and Shara, what's your experience tell you, though, with respect to those numbers?
I would say that, especially given that we've had a lot of movement across the state on restorative justice practices, that we'll see most schools are going to be under the 3% of suspensions. Shara, or anybody else want to comment?
I could just add across our portfolio at the Growth Fund, that's a common trend of suspension as a means for discipline has been just going down across the board.
Same, I feel like less than 3% is sort of the common metric. There are offenses that are required to issue suspensions for, so you can't, you know, you can't take it off the table entirely, but less than 3%, I think, is an indicator that you're maintaining a standard, but you're also utilizing some of the restorative practices Kevin alluded to.
Thank you. Any other questions? Well, thank you, Amy. Does the board need to take any action on this, or are we just receiving it?
You're just receiving it for review.
Perfect. Thanks, Amy. We'll move to item D, the consideration of a 5% COLA salary increase. Kevin, this is a review and a vote on approval of an increase aligned to a 5% COLA.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. Around this time every year, we try to get ahead of the offer letters that we want to put out to our staff to help have a high retention rate going into the following school year. And so we do this ahead of the budgeting, the final budgeting process that we do in April, May, and June, so that we can get those offer letters out. And Amy prepared multi-year financials to show the sustainability of a 5% increase for next year. And that is based on a state COLA increase that we're expecting to be 5.33%, or perhaps a little better than that. So feel this is a prudent recommendation. Staff have had a max of 3% COLA increases for several years now. And so this would be, I think, a good opportunity to move up to a 5% based on the state COLA. And just lastly, informally looking around at charters in the Bay Area, we're hearing that people are looking mostly at 5 to 6% raises right now for next year.
Questions for Kevin, Amy, or others?
Amy, remind us where would this put us compared to the districts overall?
I'm going to turn that one to Melissa.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. Thanks for the question, Ian. So every year we make sure that we are staying competitive with the district. And so overall, it puts us in a really great place. We are still competitive. There are a few places, and we've already addressed this and taken a look at it, and Amy's played with it in the budget. A few places where either Gilroy Unified or Hollister exceeds what we were currently paying. And so we've already adjusted that to, again, remain competitive.
So when you say we remain competitive, we're basically right where the competition is, so to speak. We're not at a premium relative to the competition. That's my question.
We are not. And so I would say in all years, except for maybe year one, we are meeting, we are paying the same amount that the districts are. Right. Next year's plan, the year one is actually a little higher than our surrounding districts.
And I also just want to kind of, I should have said this before, this is a very preliminary budget. It's early in the budget season. We are still working on it, but we did want to put something together for this conversation.
Thanks, Amy. So that goes to my question, which is at some point, if the state comes out with a 5.33, we can adjust it accordingly, depending upon additional information downrange. We're not locking ourselves into 5%, correct?
For the salary increase, the 5%, this would be locking that in, because memos have to go out to staff. And once we give staff their memos, we're not going to go back and say, oh, sorry, you don't get that after all. Here's a new memo at less. And so it is, if we vote today to go with the 5% increase for salaries, that's what the memos are going to go out as. We are not locking ourselves into this budget, however, and the state has already said the COLA is 5.33. And so that's why we're going with that. Does that make sense?
It does, but let me adjust my question then. So this locks us into a floor. Does it lock us into adjusting a 0.33 in the future if the board so chose?
John, it doesn't lock us into anything for the future.
I think, John, are you asking, could we go higher if we wanted to down the
road?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, we could. I think what Amy's point was is that going backwards would be
right. We're not going to do that. Right. Of course.
How do we feel about our retention overall?
Ask the same question.
Well, it's a little early to say, right now, but I know, like, preliminarily there are concerns that if we're not able to at least match what other charters and districts are doing in terms of a COLA increase, that will not bode well for our retention rates. But I think we are hopeful that we're going to continue to hit the high retention rates that we've had in the past. Melissa, is there anything else you'd like to add, or James?
I would just add that the directors and chiefs have also been talking about other acknowledgments and recognitions of advanced degrees, et cetera, special trainings that as early as next year we would implement again to increase the retention of great talent.
So have we considered in the past, just from a retention standpoint, basing merit increases on tenure? So our teachers are incentivized to stay longer and make a career at navigator?
In my time here, we have not discussed
I believe we gave a 5-year bonus this year, didn't we, Melissa?
We did.
Yeah.
We did. Chuck, I take that back.
Okay.
We did.
So there was a bonus, which obviously can be one time and doesn't have to be recurring, but it was for those teachers that have been here 5 years or more.
5 or more.
All employees. Yep.
It was all staff who have been here 5 or more years.
Okay. And is that the first time we've done that? Or have we had that practice in the past?
When we first started, we had a bonus system for teachers that was based on if we had the highest academic performance in the district compared to the district schools, we had a bonus. I think that got phased out after about 3 years. Does that ring a bell, Sharon? 4 years?
It does not ring a bell to me around bonuses for teachers.
That sounds about right.
Mrs. Story remembers.
Okay, good.
Well, Chuck, we should have this discussion sometime in the future. Victor can lead us in this with respect to, it sounds like, work for the financial committee and perhaps even the academic performance committee and the governance committee. Let me ask Amy and Kevin, why did we not go with 5.33?
Just a round number, I guess. Usually with the other charter schools I work with in the business and finance office, they also all just go with like a flat number. And so I'm not sure that I have a really good answer for you on that one.
Yeah. I don't know either, John, except, the only thing is the 5.33% COLA applies to the local control funding formula, which is like 90% of our public funding, but it will not necessarily be the same COLA increase on other state and federal funds. So hedging our bet a little bit on the conservative side made sense to me.
Okay. Okay, in the future, well, let me ask before I assume, have we had a discussion as to where we can take these numbers with respect as the board? Has it gone through Victor's finance committee in terms of looking at this and what we can absorb or not absorb?
I would say yes, in short answer, John. We've looked at different scenarios. Amy has put those as well. So those were some of the questions that we asked. Can we sustain it?
Okay. John, to your earlier point, I think this would be a great topic down the road because teachers are clearly operating in a different environment, so to speak. And I think we really should review what we're doing, why we're doing it, what we potentially could do differently that could be even more impactful from a retention standpoint, retention and attracting new talent.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, this is something we want to maximize what we can do right up to the point of what we can't do or what's in politic to do. So I'd really like to press the process so that we're confident, which is where you're going, Chuck. We're confident that we've done everything we can. You know, if it's rounding off numbers, why not 5-5, you know, for example, but we'll see that in, we can take that in the future for now, in the near future.
Can I, if I can suggest, John, this could be an opportunity for a subcommittee discussion with some interested board members and some interested staff. I think I'm a little bit more of the opinion this is a chiefs and CEO decision and less of a board decision. It's a little bit more tactical than strategic than I think that we need to be in or need to get involved with. But I think that a robust conversation around a few stakeholders wouldn't be a bad thing.
Yeah, I agree. Good. Put that in the process. Someone else was going to say something?
It was Melissa. John, yeah. Thank you. I was just wondering, was there something that the board would like HR to work on or research to have more information, but maybe Nora's suggestion of a subcommittee sort of satisfied that. Yeah. But otherwise, I'm open.
We'll come back to you on that, Melissa, at the appropriate time and with appropriate legal. Okay. Thank you.
No, can't just jump in here. I think you know, for the purposes of getting this moving, I think 5% is pretty standard across what we're saying. For context, Alpha landed on 7.5, but we are also in San Jose, and that is a different environment. So there's a little bit of discrepancy that you'll see there, which accounts for us recruiting in a different market. I think it's helpful to know who is Navigator's target teacher and what do they care about? And so, you know, what's that ideal profile that Navigator is looking to attract and to retain, and then designing compensation strategies to attract that particular type of teacher or to retain that particular type of teacher. And so if there's somebody on staff that you sort of fits that profile, like what's going to be the thing that keeps them? And I think Melissa, you alluded to non-compensation items such as like tuition reimbursement or FSA dependent care. There's a whole lot of like other benefits that can go be tied up into this compensation package to be really make Navigator stand out above the rest. And so I think that all has to come back to a strategy though of who you're trying to go for, because you can't go for all the things. You can't go for the 20-year teacher and the 5-year teacher, right? So you got to figure out where you want to kind of put your max amount of resources and what does that profile of teacher really care about. I think for us, we realized like paid maternity and paternity leave were a big deal. So now we give a month of that. And that's because our workforce has shifted over the last 5 years. And that's become a thing that's more important. So I think understanding what's your strategy behind this is also helpful in tailoring your compensation practices and packages accordingly. So
thank you,
I do that all the stuff. I love it. So
terrific. Thank you. It's helpful. Bringing us back to the 5% salary increase, are there any other comments, questions? Hearing none, do I hear a motion to approve the increase in the Navigator Schools employees aligned to the 5% cost of living adjustment?
This is Victor, so moved.
Do I hear a second?
JP, I second.
Thank you, JP. And any further discussion?
Question, is this in addition to merit increases? Or is this is this inclusive of merit increases, or is this in addition to merits?
Oh, I guess I can answer that.
I hope somebody can.
No, we're at this point, and Melissa, please correct me if I'm wrong. We don't do at this point merit increases. We just do salary cost of living increases.
We, Nora, what we do have some flexibility around our stipends for additional assignments or extra work or adjustments based on changing duties. But otherwise, we're just doing the straight COLA increase.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other discussion or questions? Hearing none, Sean, will you call the vote, please?
Dr. Dykes?
Aye.
Ian Connell?
Aye.
JP Anderson?
Aye.
John Flaherty?
Aye.
Nora Cavello?
Aye.
Shara Hegde?
Aye.
Victor Paredes Colonia?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you, Sean. And thank you for everyone for a good discussion, particularly Chuck and Shara. We'll follow up with this and come back to the board with a process in which we incorporate your suggestions and develop a system. Kevin, if you could take note of that, and we'll come back. Thank you. Moving to item E, the election of a board vice chair. We do not formally have a vice chair, and the secretary has stepped in when I've not had my technical skills up to par. So this is one of the things we want to correct and select a vice chair. And I'd like to open up the board to nominations for a vice chair, please.
John, is the plan to do nominations and voting right now?
I would. And I would start by nominating Nora as a vice chair and secretary, so that given the responsibilities that we can, according to our bylaws, have both to occupy the position, and she's on the governing committee, which is helpful, and would allow all three corporate officers to be in the governing committee. And until we are able to expand our board, Nora to accept a nomination until her term terms out. So I nominate Nora. Do I hear a second?
Ian seconds.
Thank you.
Enthusiastically.
Do I hear any other nominations? Hearing none, I'll move to close the nominations, and we will call the roll to elect Nora as the vice chair. Do I hear a second to close the nominations?
And, seconds.
Elect Nora. A second. Sean, Chuck seconds.
No, I thought Ian second, but it doesn't.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I think Ian seconds. I made the motion and
right, seconds. Right.
Sean, will you call the roll, please?
Chuck Tags.
Aye.
Ian Connell.
Aye.
JP Anderson.
Aye.
John Flaherty.
Aye.
Roy Cavello. Abstain. Shara Hegde.
Aye.
Victor Perez Colonia.
Aye.
The motion to elect Nora as vice chair is approved.
Thanks for your confidence.
Thank you, everyone. Well, thank you, Nora.
Thank you. That was my first official act. I'd like to John's term for his going into his third term as the navigator director and in his role as the chairman. Feels like for me at least time doesn't go by faster than when you're sitting on a navigator board. I can't even believe we've already had John for 4 years. Flew by. But I would like to throw out that nomination. Do I hear a second?
It's JP, I'll second.
Any discussion?
Right, yeah, we're sending them to tech classes, right? To be able to, Ben's in on this, right, Ben? Thumbs up. Beautiful. Yep, I'll keep my vote a second.
All right, Benjamin.
Really, John was the first on today. He was ready to roll before 2:30. All right, John, can you call the roll call, please?
Chuck Daggs?
Aye.
Ian Connell?
Aye.
JP Anderson?
Aye.
John Flaherty?
Abstain.
Nora Crivello?
Heck yeah.
Shara Hegde?
Aye.
Victor Perez Colonia? Victor?
Aye.
The motion has passed.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Nora. And thank you, members of the board. We'll move to item G and the creation of an ad hoc organizational success committee. Before I get to the specifics of that, an item in which perhaps is more pertinent to this section, but following our general counsel's advice, I included it in our last section of the third term. The board received a memorandum of a page and a half, which is public and will be a part of the record here. But the memorandum set forth a follow-up on the report to the board that Shara and I made involving some personnel and operational and management issues. And then the board determined that practices and processes should be revised and introduced, and staffing should be reviewed or supported and reorganized in alignment with organizational culture. Following the direction of the board, the governance committee met last week and with the general counsel and CEO present, and the following actions and recommendations that were developed were outlined there. I would ask the board to review this, and I would thank Ian and Nora both by virtue of their membership of the on the governance committee, but also because of their experience, Nora being a CEO and a parent, Ian being in the business, in the, I won't call it an industry, but in the profession, so to speak, and bringing his wide aperture to this. And Shara, of course, for her CEO and contribution in earlier reports. The memo, as you've seen, has six items in it for staff, and then we added six items for ourselves, the board, and what we intend to do. On the six items, the first one is training. The second one has to do with evaluations. The third one has to do with operations. The fourth one has to do with data. The fifth one has to do with communications. And the sixth one has to do with developing a successful outreach plan for the Navigator modeling program in the post-COVID environment so that we're able to take advantage of the good work that James and Crystal do and are moving forward. The Kevin received a copy of this memo and will circulate it at the next directors and chiefs meeting. I want to spend the couple of minutes on this, talking to the board and what we are asking from each of us in this next year or two, and particularly we have six items. We're asking the staff to participate in revising organizational culture. We are going to do the same. The first one is to each board member participates in a reboarding, which would include essentially an onboarding process that is significantly revamped and has much more detail, so that there are a lot of assumptions that are made with respect to our ability to understand LCAPs, local funding formulas, et cetera, learning in much more detail the business of charters and the business of Navigator. The second is the board reorganization, which we've talked about. We took a step on that today, electing a vice chair. We intend and will coordinate this with any material revisions to establish an executive committee, reorganize and rename the finance committee to make sure that we have the auditing function clearly articulated in that as required by law and identified by our general counsel, and that we look to include an increase, and this is something that Nora raised, the parent representation in the proper format and form, and be able to identify and recruit parents as members like JP and Nora rotate off. So we'll be working on that as well. Number three, the strategic planning and the Navigator mission. We have to sort of expedite that process. And now that it looks like the COVID pandemic is at least temporarily turning into an endemic, we'll move quickly to set up a process on that. We're going to diversity, equity, and inclusion training was identified for senior staff. We are going to submit the board to training also in DEI so that we're able to do that. Fundraising, the establishment of a development committee with fundraising responsibilities should be included, and it's significant enough so that it's broken out from the board reorganization, but it's included in that. And finally, if you recall back when we were talking about the mid-year LCAP update, Kirsten raised the notion of town halls, parent coffees, and other items were listed in there, including site leadership meetings. We're going to ask that board members increase their site presence. And specifically with respect to visiting with principals and vice principals, meeting with parents. We want to do coffees and hear from parents on a day-to-day, on a sort of what I would call a field or grassroots basis, in addition to town hall meetings, so that we learn where parents are and where other stakeholders are in the community. So, and finally, we will want to visit, and I would say, to use an old term, even shadow senior staff, so that we understand what we're not just relying on scopes of responsibility and other documents, but that we understand sort of the day-to-day of what, say, Sharon does with respect to special ed and others. So we have to turn that up in terms of what we're doing. And I know some of us are familiar and understand these functions, but and others of us do not. But the reality is that Navigator is a special and arguably unique place. And therefore the best way to learn about that is to observe in addition to reading. So we'll be asking board members, even including a requirement, board requirement, commitment to do this in our reboarding process. Finally, we need to identify strong, competent board members to agree to come to the board, and we'll be asking folks to identify the Chuck Daggs, Ian Connells, and Shara Headgates that we're missing out there, and ask them to join our boards. That will come more on that with respect to the strategic plan and how the board feels about how Navigator will grow and how it should grow. Those are all requirements that will, and I wanted to raise them in the context of establishing this ad hoc committee on organizational success, but also identify it in terms of the agenda that I presume the board wants us to execute in terms of furthering the Navigator mission. So please look at the, it's a short memo. Please look at it and know that it's a bit of a roadmap. Thanks for listening on that. The resolution is the creation of an ad hoc organizational success committee. This is a committee that as I said in the memo, will for now mirror membership in the governance committee, but will much more often be able, will expand as we increase the size of the board. And I would ask Ian or Nora to comment on this, since it was discussed in the governance committee.
Yeah, I guess my only comments on framing of this is really, I think the name is indicative of what the committee is really seeking to, you know, help assist Navigator with and support organizational success. And this is what we initially had laid out as far as some key items. And we think it's important to, at this point in the organization, from an arc of where we've been and where we're going, and looking strategically forward to both assist the board to make the jump and the organization from a board capacity. So I'm personally excited about like this section of it. I think it's a good time to pause and kind of take a breath and say, hey, we've been doing great things and we've gotten here, and let's figure out what needs to be done to carry us forward over the next 5 years.
Nora or Shara, do either one of you have?
Well, I was actually going to say, Shara brought up this great point of, you know, if we're going into 4, 5, 6 schools, it's next level management of schools, and we need to have our eyes wide open of, are we ready for that? And identifying gaps that exist to make sure that we're shoring up for that challenge. So I just wanted to thank Shara for bringing that to our attention.
I think I'll just add, you know, this is not a, I also want to acknowledge all the strengths Navigator currently has. And to Nora's point, it's just moving to the next level, and it requires a different type of style. So it's not like things haven't been going well, and there's a lot of strengths and a lot of positivity and excellent work that we're, that has already been done. We're just jumping off of that point to the next level and figuring out how to streamline and be much more strategic around operating a larger number of schools. And so it's a really exciting time. And having lived through this in the last 5, 6 years of watching an organization that was really in its like nascent infancy stages develop into like a well-oiled machine, it's like, it's pretty amazing to watch. And so I'm really excited about how Navigator is just going to develop into the next version of itself. And it's going to be really cool and really exciting.
Yeah.
Chuck, as our newest board member, but as an experienced charter school executive, do you have any insights or comments?
Chuck, we can't hear you.
Sorry about that. I think it's the right move at the right time. We are going down a path of growth, and that requires different skill sets of people on the board. It requires different structures on the board in terms of committee support and how we govern. And so I think it's a wise thing to step back and review where we are, more importantly, where we're going, how we're going to get there, and what kind of infrastructure is going to support those objectives. So I applaud the idea. I think it's well timed.
Thank you. I would say this, and I rarely reference back to history that I've experienced, but in the early 2000s, I had significant responsibility in terms of the Coast Guard, overseeing the Coast Guard, and it was at a point where the Coast Guard had over the past 50 years done everything really outstanding, really well, except tell their story. Now, that's not to say that Navigator hasn't told its story. It's just to say that when you look at the talent and the accomplishments that Navigator has had, I think in this post-COVID environment, particularly with respect to the modeling, I think we have a real opportunity to export excellence and to change in effect a lot of lives. And I think one of the things the board needs to do is be more robust in incorporating that into its mission and strategic plan. And I know that the senior staff is working on that with respect to where do we go next, and there is even looking at questions of out-of-state schools or others. But I think the board in turn has to, in the near future, very near future, sort of reflect, discuss among ourselves and take advantage of this sort of new normal and the unique things that that Navigator does that other charters don't. So it's an opportunity, whether it's modeling, wraparound services, finding a way of increasing scores and other things to take advantage of what we have and to provide a support system for that. So I'm excited and glad that we're taking this small step in terms of the committee.
You know, I think it's also an opportunity to create more clarity around accountability as a board member. What is expected? What are we going to have to do individually and collectively differently as we move forward if we expect different outcomes, which obviously we're now on a track from a strategy standpoint to really grow and leverage the success of the past.
That's a good point, Chuck. Good point. Nora, I know you raised that in the governance committee meeting, so it's a point worth making. Do I hear any other questions or comments? Hearing none. Can someone, I will move to for the creation of the Ad Hoc Organizational Success Committee, what we'll call shorthanded COR. Trying to avoid acronyms, but we'll call it that in terms of writing. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thanks, Chuck. Any additional discussion or questions? Just one for the record, the establishment of the committee and the items have been surveyed by our general counsel and have been found to be appropriate for the board to to move and to repeat, we will expand the board, or I'm sorry, expand this ad hoc committee as we are able to expand our board and keep within the regulations that the Brown Act requires. Sean, will you call a roll in favor of establishing the committee, please?
Chuck Daggs?
Aye.
Ian Connell?
Aye.
JP Anderson?
Aye.
John Flaherty?
Aye.
Nora Crivello?
Aye.
Shara Hegday?
Aye.
Victor Paredes Clunia?
Aye.
The motion is passed.
Thank you. Thank you all. The closing items is the adjournment of the meeting. Do I hear a motion to adjourn? And thank you. We kept to just 7 minutes past our requirement.
Move to adjourn.
Thank you, Nora. Do I hear a second?
Ian, seconds.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none. Sean, would you call the roll to adjourn?
Daggs?
Aye.
Ian Connell?
Aye.
JP Anderson?
Aye.
John Flaherty?
Aye.
Nora Crivello?
Aye.
Shara Hegday?
Aye.
Victor Paredes Clunia?
Aye.
Motion to adjourn is passed.
Okay, and I will adjourn the meeting with two comments. One, we will follow up on the process involving salary increases that we described here as a need for. And the board, please be aware that we may call a meeting next week, or we may just allow the, or not allow, but the CEO just may, it may be apparent enough that the CEO and the senior staff can make the call. But please be on notice. Thanks very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Take care.